everybody for coming. And we can turn these up, please. I'm talking about the ethics of doing research in other countries. And I'll start by considering why people might want to do research in other countries, and then think about whether it is lawful to do something in your own country, in another country that you're not allowed to do in your own country. And then the much more difficult question, whether it's ethical. And when we come to that, I'll ask everybody to participate in the discussion, but I'll be using this heuristic of Skene's barometer, which is based on law, and it's a way that I have suggested you can assess whether it's ethical to do research in other countries that you wouldn't be allowed to do in your own country. So if we start by thinking about why scientists would want to do research in another country that they can't do in their own country. And there's obviously a heap of reasons. They might want to be a member of an international team. They might have funding that is only able to be done if they're doing it in another country. They might need access to resources that they can't get in their own country, or financial resources. But of course, what people are most concerned about is the possibility that people will go to another country in order to avoid legal or ethical constraints in their own country. So I'm going to focus on that particular situation because that's where the most ethical concern is. And I think that perhaps a useful way for us to look at this is to take a particular scenario and explore how my theory might apply in the light of that scenario. So if we imagine a scientist in Australia who wants to undertake somatic cell nuclear transfer. And this is the Dolly technique, and so this is being used in to create a human embryo for the purpose of destroying it for research. Until recently, this was unlawful in Australia. But in the UK, it was allowed. So, not surprisingly, scientists who wanted to do this would go to the UK or to Singapore or somewhere else where this was allowed, and they could create, well, in theory they could, whether it was possible technically, but they could create the embryonic, the embryo using somatic cell nuclear transfer and use it for research, get the stem cells and bring the stem cells back to Australia so they could be bringing back a product. And that, in that case, it would be a live biological product. Or they could do the research and produce something else from it, which might be a patentable invention. Or they could get other research results which they might want to use when they come back into Australia. So they might want to publish something, they might want to be appointed to a job or to be promoted, and to benefit from it in some way. So that's where the issue arises. Is it ethical for them to try and get out of the restricted environment in Australia and to go and do this research in another country? So the two issues that might arise, one of them is, are they breaking the Australian law? So, obviously, the Australian law says you're not allowed, we'll just put it back a few years, you're not allowed to use somatic cell nuclear transfer to create embryos for research. And if you do that, you can be prosecuted and you can go to prison for 20 years. Very serious criminal offence in Australia and against the law. Obviously, against the law, and you can be seriously punished. But it's only an offence to do that within Australia. And this is, in fact, almost invariably the case with laws. Countries which are called in international law nation states have sovereignty only over their geographical area. And usually laws, almost always, a law will apply only if you do it within Australia. However, there are exceptional circumstances where something is so frowned upon in Australia that Australia will make a law which has extraterritorial application. Now, they can't prosecute people in other countries, but they can say this law applies to our nationals, and if our nationals do these things in another country, they're so serious that when they come back to Australia, we'll prosecute them. And similarly, they can say that wherever anybody commits this, if they come back, just because it's a serious offence, when they come back to Australia, they can be prosecuted. So some examples of that are making chemical weapons and paedophilia. I did have one other example.
Genital mutilation.
No, that's only an offence if you've got... I got it as one for incident. All right. That might be one that's... Yeah, it's one that's very seriously thought of. Yeah. So if the first thing that a country can do to show that it really thinks that this is very bad is to actually prosecute people when they come back for a crime that's committed in another country. It would also be possible, but to show that we don't approve of this activity, but not to such an extent that we'll send you to prison, to say that you're not allowed to use the research results when you come back, or you're not allowed to import a product or patent an invention. So it would be possible to have laws like that, but we don't in fact have those laws. So we have the things that we think are most serious and perhaps likely to occur, but certainly the most serious ones, the country can pass extraterritorial laws. So the scientist in the example I've just given you, who goes to the UK to do something that he's not allowed to do in Australia and then comes back and uses the results, that person at present commits no offence. And it's the same if you want to engage in commercial surrogacy, or you want to sell your eggs, or you want to engage in other activities where there aren't extraterritorial laws. You can do those, you can go away and do them, as long as they're lawful in the place where you're doing them, like in the United States, and you can come back pregnant, or you can perhaps be able to bring back an embryo that you formed in another country if you get permission from the relevant authorities. So, although we say in Australia this is against our law, it still doesn't, but it's not an offence in Australia when you come back. So, using this notion of laws and the way and what they reflect about people's feelings in Australia, I've constructed this barometer. And you can see that red is the things that we feel really strongly about, and then it moves round to the things that aren't regulated at all. And so I've used the level of concern as a correlation with whether we think something is unethical for the purpose of this exercise. Now, I'd just like to start up at the top right and think about the way that these activities fall on this barometer. And you can see the things that we think are okay, so okay that there are no laws on them at all, round to the things that we think are so serious that they're prohibited by extraterritorial laws. So starting with the white, if you want to do research where you just observe people, and I've based this on Australian law, so I won't talk about differences between Australia and other places. But if I want to find out whether more women than men spend their time in the garden out here or walk past St. Cross, I can just sit there with my pad and just make notes all day, and nobody will stop me. If I go to a number of different databases and I try and find out by linking them whether more women than men have died in Oxford in the last year, or look at patterns of disease, anything that's open to the public, even though I'm gathering information and putting it together and collecting information about people, which people might think is private, if it's on a number of different records, that is not regulated. So I don't even have to get ethics committee approval for that. And similarly, if there is stored human tissue that I've collected lawfully, it doesn't belong to the people whose tissue it is, so provided I've got it lawfully, I can use it in research. Sometimes I will need ethics approval for that, but if I'm able to get it without it being stored anywhere, I can do that without getting permission from anyone. So if I pick up a hair with a follicle attached, when you leave, I could use that research, that DNA research, without even having to get any ethics committee approval. Now, some of these might be things that we haven't thought through clearly as to whether there should be an ethical requirement with any of these, but this is in Australian law at the moment. There is no regulation on those. Now, when you move round to the green area, where these ones are not regulated, but they're areas where there are some controls. So where there are some controls, you might need a license, you might need to get ethics approval or something like that. But there is some sensitivity about this type of research. So medical research involving competent adults, you're allowed to do this in Australia, provided that you follow the ethical principles in the National Health and Medical Research Council's statement and any other relevant principles, and you get ethics committee approval. So it's lawful, there's no legislation specifically on it, but there is an ethical clearance required. Medical research involving children and vulnerable people, like people in prisons and in institutions, again, it is possible to do research here. There are specific ethical guidelines that deal with that, but it's not prohibited by law. You just have to follow the procedures. Now, research involving victims of capital punishment or torture, there isn't any legislation in Australia on those things. And yet, you might think, as I advance my argument, that if you were to go to another country where you're able to do that type of research and bring the results back, the fact that there aren't laws on it in Australia might not be a sufficient indicator as to whether it would be ethical to do that when you go from Australia to another country, say to China, and you do research on people who have been the victims of capital punishment. One reason why we don't have laws on that is because there is no reason to believe that anybody is going to do that. But obviously that could change. So I want to emphasise that although I've set it out like this, at any time these categories could change. So if we had people going from Australia and doing that sort of research and coming back, then that's the situation where we would have laws quite quickly. And perhaps even extraterritorial laws, because that's something that has a lot of sensitivity, you would think. Now, the next category are also permitted, but they're subject to greater controls, and these ones are mostly licensing. So if you want to do research on animals, there are statutory controls that require you to get the approval of an ethics committee, and to follow the statutory requirements in the legislation that deals with the prevention of cruelty to animals. And if you want to use surplus embryos from IVF in embryo research programs, then you need to get a license and to comply with the requirements of the legislation. But the ones that are most pertinent for the sort of discussion that we're having today come into the orange zone. And in the orange zone, these are activities that are actually unlawful in Australia. And so if you do these things, there are either criminal or other penalties that can be applied. And the creation of human embryos by somatic cell nuclear transfer was recently in that category. But there are others. So paying volunteers for medical research, that's actually an offence in Australia. And so you can be fined if you do that. Similarly, the sale of human eggs for research or for any purpose. Commercial surrogacy, creating human-animal hybrids, destructive animal research involving endangered species, painful animal research for cosmetic purposes, and reproductive cloning. Now, all those things are prohibited in Australia. And then the final ones in the red zone are the ones that are so seriously considered that there is extraterritorial law on them and you can be prosecuted when you come back to Australia. Now, bearing in mind that things can move from one category to another, my argument is that this is a guide to how seriously people in Australia view these activities. And so if something is in the red zone and we think that it's such a serious wrong that it's wrong even to do it somewhere else, I don't think that you can take a relativistic position with regard to ethics. If we think, and with regard to the ethics of bringing it back to Australia and benefiting from it, if we think it's so wrong that it's in the red zone, it's wrong wherever you do it, and it'll always be wrong. When you get round to the orange zone, there is a range of feeling about how bad these activities are. And with some of them, there is a real division of opinion. So with the creation of somatic cell nuclear transfer embryos, there was a real division, so much so that it turned out when the law was changed that the majority of people thought that that shouldn't be prohibited, that it should be allowed subject to statutory provisions. So if you look at activities that are in the orange zone, and obviously there are going to be a lot of those, they're the ones that we're most talking about today. My argument is that it may be okay ethically to do those things in another country where they're allowed and to benefit from bringing the results of those back to Australia, even if they're unlawful in Australia. So with somatic cell nuclear transfer, and if it's not allowed in Australia but it is allowed in the UK, it would be ethical to go and do it there and bring back the products or the results and profit from them. However, there are restrictions on this. So, first of all, in order to be ethical according to Australian standards, it would be required that the research should conform with international norms for the conduct of ethical research. So, what would we ordinarily expect? Well, we'd ordinarily expect that there would be ethical scrutiny by a properly constituted ethics committee, and that this ethics committee would satisfy itself that the people who are involved in donating any material for this would be people who are properly informed and give a proper consent, and that there's a report afterwards, that the scientific rigour, that the experiments that are being done are worth doing and are going to produce proper results. So, as I say, and of course that it would conform with the law in the other place. Now, as I say that, you can see that these are sort of general ethical principles that flow through ethical research in all countries. So, when we looked at this about 2 years ago, the Hingston Group, which is a group of international cross-disciplinary specialists in stem cell research. People came from all over the world and we discussed and discussed and discussed whether we could get a clear sort of agreement on when it's ethical to do somatic cell nuclear transfer. And there were some areas on which we were never going to agree. Some people just say, well, it's wrong to create a human embryo for research. So we couldn't have a statement that would say, well, it's okay, because we wouldn't get consensus on that when you have people coming from countries where that's prohibited. But we found that we were able to reach consensus on a process. And the process was something along the lines that I've described to you, that provided that you follow proper procedures and that these are overseen by a range of people, and the range of people include the scientists themselves with their own code of ethics, and the members of the ethics committee, the members of the broader scientific community, and particularly journal editors and referees of journals, that if all of these people are watching to see that the proper procedures are followed, including that the people comply with the law in the other country, then it would be ethical to do it, even if it's not ethical in your own country. Now, I thought this was quite a strong advance in thinking about whether we should allow our scientists to benefit from doing things in other countries that they wouldn't be allowed to do at home. It gives them a defence, an argument that they can put up to justify them doing that. There are some difficulties. And one difficulty is that if they're doing their research in Australia, we can watch it very carefully. So for somatic cell nuclear transfer, you've got to get a licence, so the application has to come to the licensing committee. You've got to report back when the research has been done. You have to justify how many embryos you're going to create and why you need them and things like that. If there is any doubt about whether proper procedures have been followed, the ethics committee and also the licensing committee can go to the scientists and say, show us your results, show us your premises. They've got very large powers to interrogate people, to examine things, to collect material and take it away and analyse it. And of course, we haven't got that if it's been done over here. So the degree of oversight is less rigorous than it would be in Australia, and that has to be put into the equation to see whether it makes any difference as to whether it's ethical to do it in the other country. But it seems to me that we have, we're justified in saying to the UK regulatory authorities, you've got ethics committees, you've got laws, we trust your people to conduct this oversight on our behalf. I think there are arguments in favour of requiring them to produce documentation and perhaps to give more powers to journal editors to require that when they're reviewing material for publication, or perhaps the patents, though I think it's less applicable in the patent area. But I think that it gives us a way to move forward in thinking about the ethics of doing research in other countries. There we are. That was an outline of my talk. Now, it's open for questions.
Do you want to field your own questions?
Yeah, probably easy.
Is there an issue about which other countries? I mean, I'd hope that Australia might be more sympathetic to what goes on in this country than what goes on in North Korea, for instance.
Yeah, I think this is an interesting issue. I mean, if we think what happened in South Korea, where Dr. Wang used eggs in his research that he had got from one of his research assistants. And you think about that and think, well, that was lawful where he was, so you're taking a relativist position. And on my argument, if it's lawful there and it's subject to oversight, then it would be lawful for our scientists to go there and come back and use it. I have got this provision about complying with international ethical norms, and you might say that one of those is that you shouldn't impose undue coercion on people to participate in research. And even if this woman was apparently agreeing to do this willingly, it's an uneven relationship, and that's what most of us would be concerned about if we looked at that. So I could, I suppose, rely on my proviso that this doesn't comply with the international norms. And another example is reproductive cloning, which is unlawful in Australia. But, you know, say people went and did that in another country. And, you know, would it, if it was done as a treatment, would that even fall within our research code?
Yeah, I think the point of my question was that perhaps there might be a difference in the way we look at North Korea and South Korea, that perhaps our attitude to a democracy that's come to a decision about these matters may be different from our attitude to some other country which, goodness knows how it's come to a decision about what to do with Iraq.
Yes. Well, it would be difficult for us to say if we're going to have a general principle, we'll look at this country by country. I agree that we're much happier with the UK since we've pretty much got our methods from you. And similarly in the US, but that's really only with federally funded research that it's got all these sorts of restrictions. And there's all sorts of research that's privately funded, and even though it's in the US, it may not succumb or submit readily to this sort of analysis. I have to think about it some more.
Right. Yeah. So I guess one thing to ask about is these ethical consensus statements. So I wasn't aware of the existence of these things, so maybe if you would just tell us a bit more about them and give us some reason to think that they accurately track international ethical norms that exist and which we'd agree to.
Well, I think that really we had in mind an amalgamation of a whole lot of different statements which have common principles. So in Australia we've got the National Health and Medical Research Council's national statement, and we've got the Declaration of Geneva and the Belmont Report. I mean, it's a series of ethical statements put together. I can't point to something that is a one statement of what every country believes in as a principle of proper ethical research.
But don't you need something like that for this proposal to work?
Well, I think that the principles that I've set out are fundamental and universal. So the need for information, consent, proper... I mean, I think our statement in Australia is pretty universal. But I think if you compare what we have in our statement in Australia with what you have here, and in most other countries where they have statements of for the ethical conduct of research, the principles would be very similar.
Is it a failure of consensus if the North Koreans or someone else refuse to go along with whatever the principles are?
Yes, it would be. Yeah. I mean, it would only work if we say that research has to conform with a number of principles. So if you're allowed to round up your participants at gunpoint and put them into this research project, the rest of us couldn't agree that even if that's the ethical principle in that country, that's ethical.
I guess I meant more, do we have a consensus if not everyone, if there are a few countries that just refuse to go along with it? And if we don't, then is this working?
Well, it depends how broad the consensus has got to be. I think that most countries would probably sign up to informed consent and free and voluntary entry into a research program, and that it's not ethical to do science unless you're going to get a reasonable result, because you don't put people at risk unless there's going to be some achievable outcome. I think those are fundamental and universal principles, I think.
But you just said most countries, and there's a gap between most countries and universal, and that's the problem, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I'd need to see which countries don't say those things, which ones are prepared to say we don't care whether people go into a research trial voluntarily.
Well, I think it's not what's strictly my area, but I think informed consent has been an issue with clinical trials in, for example, some African countries, where it may be more important to have a sort of community consensus rather than, as we would understand it, individual informed consent. I mean, maybe others in this room know more about that issue than I, but I'm not convinced that it is an absolutely universal issue that, as we in Western developed countries understand individual informed consent, necessarily seen as desirable in absolutely every country.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's certainly the truth. Yeah. If we want to go and use genetic material from particular ethnic groups, for example, that has particular ethical sensitivity because the ethical the genetic material is shared by everybody in the group. But even if you want to go to Brazil and collect things in the forests and take them away, it's seen as a community interest rather than the interest of the individual landowners.
Yeah.
So I think that, yes, I think it's true that there are issues there. Well, it's very difficult for me to put a broad argument that's going to apply in every case. But I take into account the need to consider perhaps individual consequences, individual approaches in particular countries.
First, I like the barometer and the colours. Just a point of clarification on that with the Hickson group, what was the percentage that was consensus with? Is that 100% or?
Everybody signed up to it.
So it's got to be 100 before it's consensus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like any group where you're seeking consensus, there is a risk of the least common denominator. It's you have to concede a lot in order to get everybody to come into it.
Right. And then when you with oversight in stem cell research, when you have scientists and you're looking at experimental results, is it a law in Australia that even negative results of experiments have to be recorded?
No, it should be, but it's not.
Yeah, so that's would be a real desirable new feature for this kind of.
Yeah, I think this is really important, and we have requirements of adverse effects on participants in research trials, but not a nil finding. And there are real, I agree that there are real ethical reasons for requiring that, because you don't want to be putting people at risk again when you know that the outcome is going to be fruitless. And also, it saves money too, and resources, because other people don't have to repeat the same experiments.
Right. Mm. That's more and more prevalent. That there's getting more steam for that idea in other areas of research. Just let's publish, let's at least keep the negative results somewhere where they can be accessed. So,
So you'd put that into this international agreed set of principles.
I think that would be a nice addition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a question. Because everything that is prohibited in Australia is in the colour red.
No, those ones are extraterritorial. The ones that are prohibited are in both red and orange. So the ones
Okay, I'm sorry, so this is orange.
Yeah. Well, it's all these ones here are prohibited, unless the ones that are in orange are prohibited just in Australia, and the ones in red are prohibited even if you go and do them in another country.
Am I right that a researcher who accepts the barometer in Australia, say, could use it to argue against prohibition of things which fall into the orange area?
Well, that isn't my argument. My argument is that they go and do these things in the other country and then bring them back.
But it seems like it might be an implication of your view, and I mean, it wouldn't be an objectionable one, because when one hears the overall structure of the position, one thinks, well, what it could be that what's being done in the other country is just terrible. But actually it isn't, because of the reference to international ethical consensus statements and ethical oversight requirements. It seems to me quite reasonable to say that scientists should be allowed to do anything, right, that's permitted by these consensus statements and oversight requirements. And if that's the case, and if that's what's doing the work, as it were, the moral work, when they are being permitted to do research in other countries, then it does follow, doesn't it, that they could object to the laws in their own country as unjustifiable?
Well, these ones are all the most contentious ones. This is a division of opinion. So there'll be some people that will take the view that you've just put, and said, well, they'll say that our law is wrong, we should just change it. If there are other countries where you're allowed to do this research with ethical supervision, and it should be the same here. But if the people who are against it are politically powerful or very vocal, which is often the case with things like embryo research, the government won't change the law. And even if you think it's ethical to do it in Australia, if the law's against it, it'll still be an offence and you'll still be punished. So it doesn't help you very much.
Well, I'm not sure, because I don't mean that these researchers should feel themselves justified in breaking the law in Australia. What I think they can do is object to being put under the legal constraints that there are in Australia, and appeal to the people who are putting them under those constraints to reflect upon that.
Yeah, well, they can certainly say that it's wrong that if many people in Australia think that something shouldn't be prohibited, that it's allowed in other countries, then the law should be changed. Yes.
Are there any ethics and scientists arguing against the law, and whether the law can change in the future?
There are scientists who are against it.
Are there any ethicists? Especially ethicists.
Oh yes, there are many ethicists against somatic cell nuclear transfer in Australia.
Against the law, not the to try to argue. Support the research. Are there any ethics to support, arguing to support the research in Australia and against the government's law?
Yeah, opinions are divided. So some ethicists support it and some criticise it.
So whether in the future it can be changed, the law can be changed?
Yes, well, the law has now been changed. And it's lawful to do it in Australia. But we could move this forward and say, well, if the legislation that's in the House of Commons at the moment in Australia, in the UK, the Human Fertilisation and Embryology Authority Bill, if that's passed, scientists here will be allowed to create half animal, half human embryos. And that's not allowed in Australia. So to change my example, if Australian scientists came and worked with the people here, like Stephen Minger, who's allowed to do this, and then take the research back, would that be unethical? And my argument on this is obviously no, because it would be allowed here, subject to proper ethical supervision, and views are divided in Australia.
So what's your opinion? Whether you use any... whether you support?
Well, I support it. I support the UK bill. I support creating animals, human embryos for research. I support the creation of human admixed embryos that has embryonic material from animals, because I see a clear hope of treatments coming out of this, and the opportunity for scientists to practice their techniques in IVF and help people with infertility. So I do support all these things. And I think it's ethical and a jolly good idea if scientists from Australia come and get in on it. And I think what will happen is that, particularly if anything comes out of this research in the UK, I think the Australian law will be changed. Tony?
I'm just trying to get clear whether I've got what your... position is. Have I got it right? Your position is this: there are a set of principles, which let's call them X, that all decent countries or all decent people should agree must be followed.
Yeah.
There are then further principles, let's call them Y and Z, each are a class of principles, which some decent countries and decent people think should be followed, but others disagree. So that any one country, any one decent country, should have as illegal X, and then most countries will have something else. So Britain might be X plus Y and Australia X plus Z.
That's right.
But there are some countries, indecent countries, that don't outlaw X. And your proposal is that if a citizen of one of the decent countries does some research that violates X legally in an indecent country, then their country, being a decent country, that's where they come from, should prosecute in your extraterritorial
system. It can only prosecute if it's an offence that has extraterritorial applicability.
So your proposition is that once we've agreed what these decent,
what X is, then you're
saying all decent countries should make extraterritorial prosecutory laws about X. Is that?
I think your thesis? You could make an argument for that. There is one other thing that you have to consider, and that's whether anybody is likely to do it from the first country is likely to go there and do it. So we don't have laws preventing our scientists going to another country and participating in research on people being tortured. And one reason why we don't have extraterritorial laws on that is because it is assumed that Australian scientists will not do that. But if they did, you know, if it was a concentration camp situation and people were being frozen in research, and our scientists looked as if they were going to participate, I think that the government would pass extraterritorial laws on that.
Wouldn't another possibility be to say that we should have international courts to deal with that, say international criminal court or something like that? So it isn't just each individual country making their own laws, but we should say actually, internationally, we must agree that this is prohibited everywhere and we will take international action. I mean, we're beginning to go down
that road. But on this hypothesis, in this indecent country, it's lawful. So usually...
Yes, but this is a way of bringing them to heel.
Yes, yeah. Well, there'd have to be a mechanism for saying of international law where all of the countries, or enough of them to outvote this one, agreed that this should be a new principle of international law for which people would be prosecuted. Yes. Usually international laws of that kind are between countries.
But we are beginning to get international courts. I mean, it's controversial.
Yes,
the United States isn't keen on the International Criminal Court, but we're beginning to get that kind of thing.
Yeah, yes. Inciting unrest and things like that are the sorts of things, on a large scale, are the sorts of things that happen within one country and could be regarded as a crime against humanity of the kind that could come before an International Criminal Court. Julie?
So the interesting area is the orange one, which are prohibited in this country by law, but aren't prohibited in other countries.
Yeah.
And the idea here is that scientists can go outside of their country into another country where it is legal, provided they conform to international law norms.
Yeah, right?
So yesterday the Chinese produced a fluorescent human embryo. Okay, now, that's clearly legal within China.
Yeah.
It would be illegal in Australia. And the problem here is that there is no ethical consensus about, international ethical consensus about the creation of fluorescent embryos. So what do we do when there isn't a kind of consensus? Because that's going to be most of these cases, even if you go back to the cloning case. Some international, you know, statements prohibited cloning, some allowed it. So it's hard to see what you do and how Skene's barometer works for this extra class of cases where there isn't a clear international ethical consensus. I mean, I don't have a problem with creating fluorescent human embryos. I'm sure many people do.
I think if we haven't got an ethical consensus, we'd have to work on one.
Well, I don't think we'll get an ethical consensus anytime soon on creating fluorescent human embryos.
We've got the International Declaration on the Human Genome, which says that you shouldn't interfere with the...
But what about if some people stand up with good reason, like me, and say, I think that statement's wrong?
Yeah.
Are scientists then allowed to go to China and create fluorescent human embryos?
And where do you draw the line? I mean, I can see an argument about... scientists moving to an indecent country, if you like, but what about the publication of the results by scientists in that indecent country? Is the decent country then allowed to use the results of that research if they think it's going to be useful for some public health or
Yeah, it's interesting you asked that question. This was published, the full paper was published in the Public Library of Science, which is an electronic free access journal. So it has, it's got a high impact rate and a lot of people look at it. And after, just after it was published, a couple of journal editors rang me up, just out of the blue, not having seen it, and asked me this very question. We have received an article for consideration, and it appears to us not to conform with what would be required ethically in Australia, and these were people in Australia. And so what do you think our obligations are? And I said, well, I think that you should look at whether it was lawful in the other place and whether it complied with the sort of ethical standards that we would require under our national statement. And if it does, I think that you could properly accept the paper for publication in Australia. So I think it was useful to that extent. But I mean, I certainly take on board issues like the one that Julian's raised. You know, what if it is a completely novel procedure? Or if it's one on which there is you know, widespread disagreement. In Australia, it's prohibited to put foreign material into the germline. So that's why that would be prohibited in Australia, this fluorescent human embryo. And most people probably would say it would support that. I think that there isn't as much division of opinion about that as somatic cell nuclear transfer. It hasn't been discussed much. And, you know, similarly getting gametes from skin cells, it hasn't had a lot of discussion. And that's when things might move from one part of the barometer to another. But at the moment, most people would be against that. So with the fluorescent embryo, Julian could be in Australia saying this is okay, and we've looked at other types of novel embryos and we've said it's okay to create them if you can see some useful purpose in getting medical results in doing it. But he's just one person or a small group of people.
But, so, but the English legislation would permit the creation of a fluorescent human embryo. So,
assuming it goes to
So an Australian who went to China could point to England and say, well, it's not just me, the English have
legislation. The
English
have got that right, yeah,
so,
that's
so
right.
So
it's a growing consensus. And I think if it was debated for a bit in Australia and people thought about it, that people in Australia would say that too. But at the moment, there isn't that sort of division of opinion that might support the argument I've made in favour of somatic cell nuclear transfer. Yeah.
Is your motivation that you think decent countries are not prosecuting their own citizens enough when their citizens go to indecent countries and do immoral research? Or is your motivation that people in decent countries, like Australia, are put under too much pressure by their country not to go to another decent country, like the UK, to do research that would be illegal in their own country?
Yeah, it's the latter. It's to support scientists who I think are doing research that is supported by many people in Australia, but is prohibited by a vocal minority.
Right, I thought your motivation was the opposite, was the first one. Mm. Right.
Yeah. No, sorry, I didn't take your question. I didn't see you had your hand up.
Well, actually, yes, it's a slightly nitpicky, nerdy question. I think I might have got things wrong, actually. I mean, I noticed most of the items in your barometer are research methods or populations that might be studied in research. Except for when we get round to the red, where you've really got, I think you've got topics. I mean, I think you'd agree that they're of great public health interest to know what the effects of chemical weapons might be or why countries use chemical weapons. But, you know, research into preventing paedophilia and genital mutilation would be very useful, lots of public health implications. I mean, presumably you're not saying that research on those topics should not be done because the activities are prohibited.
Yeah, well, making chemical weapons is the offence.
Yes,
so if you go and try and make the chemical weapons. But the question then is, if you make the chemical weapons and then try and do, you know, research on them, even if you don't hurt anybody doing it. We've said that making chemical weapons is just a bad thing, it shouldn't be done.
We're not saying that, say, doing setting research in Iran or Iraq, where, you know, chemical weapons were used in order to study the health effects of the use of those weapons is wrong. You're not saying that.
I think it's the actual creation of the weapons. And similarly, if you were encouraging people to undertake paedophilia,
to see what's the best approach to a 10-year-old child or something like that. Okay, fine.
That's the sort of thing I had in mind.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Okay. If you take the list of things under the orange section, seems you can divide those into two categories. One where, for example, like the creation of research on human embryos, presumably something counts as a human cell nuclear transfer embryo wherever it is in the world. So that's like a sort of like a scientific fact as to whether or not you're actually doing that sort of research. And there are other things on the list that are going to be different depending on the social context in which they're done. So there are some things on the list which, for instance, might be construed differently depending on the social context, or whether or not they count as being right or wrong is going to differ depending on the social context. So, for example, what counts as paying a volunteer for medical research? You can see, for instance, in the context like a country like the UK or Australia, why we think it's wrong to do that, and what might count as being payment, and it's based on notions of inducement and how, whether or not the consent is free. But if you go to research conducted in, say, developing countries or much, much poorer countries, people are often given rewards for research. And so, for example, one of the reasons why that's often the case, sometimes the individuals are given a small reward. Sometimes communities are given reward, but people that come from the communities, they're given some payment, for example, in terms of medical facilities or the chance to take part in some kind of benefit. And it's often precisely for ethical reasons. So, for example, the four populations that were used by the HapMap consortium, they used a population from Nigeria, and benefits were considered very carefully, precisely because the long-term expected outcomes of the research are likely to be medical treatments, which for people taking part in the research in Nigeria, very unlikely ever to be able to benefit from. So it's precisely that kind of ethical reason that it was seen, and actually the rewards were given were fairly tiny compared to what we might think is big. So that social context makes quite a difference. And if you look at something like, what counts as commercial surrogacy, the sale of human eggs for research, so that if, for instance, you get some kind of, if you're taking part in an IVF program and you say that you're going to give some of the spare eggs for research, but you get a reduced fee, is that sale, or is it just a tricky way of getting around it? And if you look at something like cosmetic purposes, different cultures, are going to count different things as being purely cosmetic. So there's room for interpretation according to the different countries. Yeah, the interpretation might be different. What counts under the rule is different, and why it might or might not be seen to be wrong in different countries is different. So it seems to me that to be not particularly wrong. Yeah. So you know, you can see why a scientist might be perfectly happy with paying somebody in another country to take part in research, and that might be wrong in Australia, but okay in another country. And it's not necessarily problematic.
Yeah. Well, I think that the orange ones are ones that are prohibited by law, but people in Australia, so it's just based on Australia, but people may disagree.
Yeah.
And I think that with the thing, obviously with somatic cell nuclear transfer, there were disagreements.
Yeah.
But with the things that you've just described, I think that there would be a lot of disagreements there too.
Yes.
And so if you say we're going to a third world country and we're going to put its people into some sort of method we collect tissue or we collect other resources and we use that for our own good, and therefore we'll build them a hospital, I mean, most people would think that that was a good thing.
Yeah.
So I think that as you've identified it, that's another reason why you might say these things in the orange are open to different views, not only because of one's own moral framework, but because of the different scenarios and the type that you describe. I think that really supports my view.
Yes, it does. Yes. Because it's not like you're just going to a Cayman Islands where you can do some chunky research because you can get away with it. It's because actually it is different in that context.
Yeah.
I regarding items in the red thermal barometer, you haven't sort of really specified sort of how close you've got to be to the experiment before they become illegal. I mean, if someone publishes raw data on some human experiment or some chemical experiment in North Korea or somewhere, and an Australian scientist comes along and goes, okay, well, I'm going to use this as a test, as the basis for my hypothesis, thereby advancing my own career, and getting really close to the thing, and you can sort of imagine close to it, but actually, in direct communication with the people running the experiments, and just sort of wondering if there's any safeguards against that kind of thing, and if there's any kind of line.
Well, if you compare it with the Nazi war experiments, for example, if somebody comes along now and finds the write-up of the people who have frozen them and the effect that had on them, and writes that up, and assuming that those sorts of experiments were in the red, because if people were doing them today, then I think that that's where they'd be. Is it enough that you're taking advantage of it? And I think we might say, in the same way that I gave the examples of making chemical weapons and doing research on them, I think that it's the research that actually makes the chemical weapon that is the reprehensible part. And if you went to a country where they've used chemical weapons and went around and did medical tests on people and questioned them about the long-term effects and things, I don't think that would be considered reprehensible. So I think it would depend on the nature of what you've done. And if you hadn't done anything to, with an intention of doing the reprehensible thing, but merely writing it up later, I don't think it would fall within that category.
So, it feels like it's sort of a sliding scale. I mean, you could, without leaving this country, you could fund such experiments in another country, or you could give ideas to people in another country and just communicate with them. All these sort of steps on, as I say, a sliding scale where...
Well, if you're encouraging them to do it.
But
if you wrote to somebody in another country where you're allowed to torture people and said a really good experiment when you're torturing that person would be to do X, and this will increase the level of pain for this person, it'd be interesting to see whether they confess more quickly.
But I don't feel like the idea of encouragement is an either-or thing. You can give encouragement is something you can do more or less.
It would be interesting if we could find out.
Yeah, because it feels like you need to kind of have a line there somewhere and say, it's going to be arbitrary, but it needs to be there, just because otherwise you can't draw up a law which really prohibits anything. Because, you can sort of imagine in a few years people will be performing research in other countries without leaving their own one just by, manipulating machines through telecommunication. So it definitely feels like someone needs to draw a line somewhere.
Well, I think that a line is that you should be encouraging the activity that we regard as reprehensible.
We should draw to a close. So we will have drinks next door, and then I think Lois' special request to the Angel Sharma for dinner if anyone wants to join us. Have we booked?
Yeah.
Okay, so but if you haven't booked, we actually have one.